You always bail me out. Thank you.
Thank you, Christy. All right, it is 6 o'clock. We would like to call the Monday, August 8th business meeting to order. And if everybody would stand and do the Pledge of Allegiance, please. Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we're at the point for public comment. If you are here for public comment, you can step up to the podium. Please state your name and your address and why you're here. Did you guys want to talk? Okay. All right, next we have approval of minutes. Minutes were distributed. If there are no additions or corrections, I will take a motion to approve the minutes as distributed.
Move to approve the minutes as distributed.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion passes. Okay, next we have the presentation from MAS Alliance, LLC, the Federalsburg Cannabis Campus. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
Good evening. My name is Tim Crosby. I'm principal with Crosby & Associates, architects and planners out of Cambridge, Maryland. And I believe joining us on Zoom is Seth Murphy. He is the CEO. Seth is still recovering from COVID and thought it best not to come here in person. So I hope Seth is there, and we'll be asking Seth to give some comments as we get through the presentation.
I have Todd. I don't have Seth yet, but I do have Todd.
Okay. Todd Hughes is the COO and one of the owners of MAS Alliance. So hello to Todd. Sure he'll be contributing as we go through this. Larry, can you bring up the PowerPoint? So what we're going to share with you tonight, we're here for information. No, not that, the PowerPoint. So you're all familiar with the site. It's 300 Reliance, and we're here to show you what MAS plans are for development of the site. I think you're probably going to have to rotate that one over. So we're going to show you both what their long-range plans for the site are, and then to just briefly let you know what phase one. They have a very aggressive schedule. They're hoping to... we had an information meeting with the Planning Commission last week. We're hoping to do a formal submission to the Planning Commission for the end of August. And then, of course, following that up with additional meetings as necessary to receive approval following months. So this is a slide that just shows the existing. There are four major buildings on site. Of course, the first one is the one that's closest to Reliance on the northwest corner. That's the old bakery. And then there are three identical buildings that were support buildings that are located on the site. The site's a total of 23.1 acres. It is the topography of the site where the buildings are is relatively flat. We're talking about a 1 to 2 foot difference. And in the northeast corner, there are substantial differences in grade. It goes down to two basins that are part of that greater area's watershed. Of course, bounded on the north by the railroad, the bypass on the south, and then, of course, Reliance. So go ahead, Larry. So this just shows you, it is a heavily forested site, and we did the survey course, using a drone. So this is what the existing forest cover is now on the site. Eastern Wood Products got a permit to deforest a portion of the site. I think that forest agreement is recorded. And so this is how we came to the site itself. So next. Okay, so what this plan is, and by the way, there are two operational wells on the site. We'll talk about the use of that water as we go through the presentation. So they're going to be, the green buildings are the planned buildings. The yellow buildings are existing. And the kind of brown, kind of gold color, that is where either outdoor growing operations will be or greenhouse growing operations will be. So we're going to look at, and this shows you the plan in the forested part of it. So we're really not going to be removing any portion, additional portions of the forest except in the southwest corner. We're going to have a small outdoor grow area there. The site's completely fenced. We understand that this context is very, very important. You know, right across the river tracks, the residential area, to the northeast, and of course directly across from the bakery, there's a playground, and you know, a good part of the town is within shouting distance. So we're taking great care to make sure that they're going to be a good neighbor, and we'll talk about all the positives and negatives and talk about how we're dealing with each one of them as we go through this. Go ahead, Larry. So we're going to look at each piece individually. So this is the old bakery building. This building is going to be totally rehabbed, and it'll have two components in it, the pilot plant, which is one of the things we're going to go ahead and immediately. And the pilot plant is where a lot of R&D is done. It's kind of that place where they'll try out new plant strains, new plant products. And then the green, we're going to be adding on to that building, and we show you the total square footages. And on the first floor of that building, it will be an expansion of that processing space, because that's where they'll be extracting from the cannabis plants the ingredients to be able to make things like gummies, vapes, tinctures. Those kind of products will be made here. And the second floor of the building will be for their corporate offices. So it's an office space. And then the old machine shop will be part of the power, their power plant. And I do just want to take a minute. The MAS partners are very committed to sustainability. And as part of those goals, we're hoping to make this site 40 to 50% self-powered. So we're going to be generating power on site, and we're going to be doing that by different methodologies. Of course, solar will be one part of it, but then with the cannabis industry, they generate biomass because the majority of the plant isn't used. Back in the 60s, when I happened to buy it every once in a while, it was not the flower, it was the leaves. You know, we threw the flower away just to show you how stupid we were. So there's a lot of biomass that they generate. And so now there are state-of-the-art biomass generators that take that biomass and turn it into steam, which is fed into their HVAC systems, and to generate electric power. So they're hoping to be able to generate 40 to 50% of the power on site, along with a whole bunch of other sustainable strategies that we're going to be employing in how the organization operates, how it handles waste. There's just a whole list of sustainable strategies that they'll be following. Go ahead, Larry. Next, building number two is, of course, behind Building 1, and what we're going to be doing there. Building 2 is where the cultivation, indoor cultivation happens. That's where the plants are. There's the mother room, which is where the original plants are. Then the plants are cloned. Then they're vegetated, which is the first stage of growth. And then once they're vegetated to a certain height, they'll go into the indoor grow rooms, and they'll stay in the grow rooms until they flower and they mature. This building, too, will also contain areas to dry and trim the plant, because they have to do that, and then to cure the flower and then package it ready for transport and sale. So building, what we're calling building number 5, will be a building of the same footprint as building number 2, but it'll be 2 stories tall. It'll be totally devoted to more cultivation space. Now, one of the things we do want to correct here, and we'll talk a little bit about this, you'll see in the new buildings in this PowerPoint presentation, we were talking about having on the roof outdoor growing on the roof. After the Planning Commission meeting and really reflecting on it, we decided not to do that. For two cannabis-related and then one sustainability reason. One, there is the potential that some of the plant could have been viewed, and that's not permissible. The other is that the plant, when it flowers, does have an odor. We'll talk about odor. It's easier to control odor when the plants are on the ground in a contained area and they receive the odor treatment that we're scheduled to do. So really they looked at it and they said, well, look, it'd be great to have the additional cultivation space, but it's more important that we don't have any potential problems with any negative impact to the community. And it has a positive benefit that now it gives us a big roof, and you'll see in the renderings, a big roof for more solar panels. And so all of the roofs of the new buildings will be completely covered with solar panels. So, next slide. So this shows you buildings 3 and 4. They're the existing buildings. And as we grow, they'll contain more cultivation space, more vegetative space, but it'll also be where shipping and receiving is. It'll be a big part of that. It'll also be where the major packaging hall is. So by the time all of this is finished, these 3 buildings will be about 75,000 square feet of cultivation, packaging, and support. So, next, Larry. So then, next to this, you'll see building number 8, if my eyes are correct. This is a new building, and it will be connected to building number 4, and it is a building for additional cultivation. So when this is all done, we're renumbering the buildings, by the way, but buildings 5, 2, 3, 4, and 8 will all be cultivation, and building 1 plus the additions to building 1 will be all processed. Go ahead. So, a couple pieces here. So the question is, one of the questions, of course, I would have is, where the heck are all the employees going to park? Again, because of sustainability, we're trying not to increase the impervious surface as little as we can. And I think when you see the details when we go to the Planning Commission the next time, the site right now is about 31% impervious, both built and land. We're not going to be increasing that very much at all. Because, for example, the parking deck, which we're going to be building a structured parking deck to park 300 cars, because we think that's the employment basis that it's going to have, plus the surface parking. This goes directly on top of existing impervious surface. So this doesn't increase the impervious surface by a single square foot. The gold area down below is that small outdoor grow. This would be for a specialty strain of plants, and it'll be very contained. So go ahead. So now we are showing you the two other grow areas. The yellow building is an existing wood sawmill. We're going to be putting an addition on it, about doubling its size. That'll become the head house. That's where all of the plant support for the outdoor grow happens in there. To the north of that, you see that little L-shaped. That's going to be for greenhouse grow. And that will be a totally enclosed greenhouse. And then the lower portion, which is the current area that the wood products company cleared, will be the outdoor grow. What's important to see here is that, and we'll show you when we get to the clay models to show you, none of this will be able to be viewed from anywhere. Not only because the Cannabis Commission requires that it not only be fenced, it has to be obscure fencing, so it can't be seen. But you can see by not taking any of the woods away that there's absolutely no view into this or no ability to see any plants growing from any of the adjacent residential areas or from any of the playground area. Sorry. So we give you the totals here. If you don't mind, I can speak loud. I'm going to walk just a little bit closer so I can read numbers.
And Seth is on now, by the way. Seth is on.
Oh, he's good. Hey, Seth, how are you? So right now there's a total existing building area of 112,000 square feet. The new building area, counting the parking deck, is 288,000, so for a total of square footage when the master plan is totally completed of 400,000 square feet and change. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. All right, so now what we're going to do is we're going to look at what we call, and Bob knows this term, we call, called the clay models. So as we design these buildings, we begin to really create them three-dimensionally so that we can see what they are in real life. So this first one, so this is the first view of the building, the parking deck, and then on top of the parking deck is really one of the beautiful pieces, not only architecturally but use-wise, that MAS is going to create. And Seth can talk about this a little more. MAS is a social equity company. They not only believe it, they walk the talk. This is up here on the top of the parking garage. Is going to be what's called the Imaginatorium. So what it is a series of buildings that will be interconnected. And in here will be where all of the training. And as you guys might not know, cannabis is a very intense training organization across the board. So it'll be where they'll have their training. There'll be an auditorium. There'll be R&D labs. And there are going to be other areas where their social equity side of their business, that they can produce programs. The areas will be available for the public to use. There will also be areas where they'll be able to see inside the entire facility to see the processes in real time going on. And then that it will be an absolutely wonderful outdoor space. This is building one right over here. So this begins to show the new addition to building one. This is building two. The new addition to building two, building four, the new addition, and then, of course, the parking deck and building on top. Up here is the head house, and the greenhouse, and you can begin to see the outdoor grow area, and you can see how the headhouse building and the greenhouse completely shields it from view from anywhere, and the wood shields it, and then, of course, the obscured fencing will actually take it to another level. Go ahead, buddy. So we just wanted to give some views. I think I'll come back over here because I can see it better from here. The design of the buildings is to be modern. They are industrial buildings, but you'll see that they're designed to be a real asset to the community. MAS has a vision about what they want people to see when they come to the site. Go ahead, Larry. So here's the back of the site. You can see the greenhouse, the head house, and the outdoor grow area, and you can any vision onto the site. The site is a very secured site. The Cannabis Commission requires it. There are cameras all over the site, and it is manned 24 hours a day, and it has its own security force. So it's a very secure facility. Go ahead, Larry. So this gives you the idea of the parking garage is there with the buildings on top, and the new buildings you're seeing to the left, and this is the main entrance that you all are familiar with. So these buildings are being built, and we're not losing forest or vegetation as a result of it. So we're really trying to respect, because that's part of sustainability, is to be able to preserve the environment as much as possible. So this is the main entrance, would be the main entrance to the corporate offices, and you can see the parking deck in the back. And we'll be fleshing these renderings out, and you'll begin to see materials and colors, and when we're finished with them, they'll be very photorealistic. And they'll tell the true story of the investment that MAS is going to take. Go ahead, Larry. Again, this is where all of the production offices will be. The front's corporate offices is where all the production offices will be. And they'll take down that small little building that's in front of building 3 and 4 now. That'll come down, and this new building will go up. This gives you a view of the two-story new building that will be added on to building number 2. And you see in the distance the building that will be added on to building number 4 and the new corporate office, or the new production offices that will be on the front of buildings 3 and 4. Good. And just another view of, down through the campus. So this is the place where we're having a lot of fun, right? This is going to be this really special place. Community be welcome. There's going to be a lot of really good programs that are going to come out of this part of the campus. It'll be exciting architecture. It'll be a wonderful place for our community to have space that they can use. It'll really be a landmark piece of the building. This is the head house, and to the left is the greenhouse. And you can see here by this view that there's absolutely no view of the outdoor grow space beyond. So what I want to do is let you with a couple statistics. This master plan is a plan to take place over the next 10 to 15 years. The to the investment that they're going to be making in today's dollars is roughly $130 million based on this plan. And they're going to be producing between 400 to 600 jobs at a minimum. So they want to be a good neighbor. They understand that there's a context out here. And putting it all on the table, cannabis, at one particular point in their growth, has an odor. Some people think it's not offensive, but any odor other than what's existing is not acceptable. So in the indoor cultivation, there is a very sophisticated odor treatment system so that no odors will come out of the building. So the question then is the outdoor grow. The outdoor grow has an odor when it flowers, which is September, September, October. And we're going to be employing a outdoor odor control system by Bayer Scientific, which is the world's leader in odor control. And Mayor said at the Planning Commission meeting, the easiest way to think about this is that this odor control system is Febreze on steroids. But this Febreze is unique, and it's important to understand. Febreze controls odors in a different way. It doesn't mask them. It actually destroys them. And this outdoor system, what it has is a waterless system that actually, through connecting to carbon within the plant as it is, will negate the odor. They're very serious about controlling the odor. It is something that they are committed to do, and they want to be a really good neighbor. So happy to answer any questions. Seth, you still there?
Tim, I'm here.
Okay. So I want to introduce Seth Murphy. He's the CEO. His wife and daughter got over cannabis. So you can see who the strong ones are in the family.
I mean, COVID.
Because he's still a cannabis. That was really good. I was trying to make a joke of it. It was better than I thought. Anyway, Seth is still recuperating. He really wanted to be here this evening, but he didn't want to take a chance. And so, Seth, I'll turn it over to you, my man.
Hey, Ted, thank you. Thank you very much. Everybody, thank you so much for having me. Mayor Abner, it's always a pleasure to see you. As Tim said, I am so very sorry I can't be there with you in person. It's very important for me, for everybody there to get to know me, ask me any questions. I want you to consider me as an open book and a good neighbor. But I just didn't want to put anybody at risk. I still have tested negative or positive for COVID. As early as yesterday, and I just didn't want to bring that element to the meeting. And I don't really feel very well yet, so I'm here via Zoom, even though I want you all to know that I'd much, much rather be there in person with you. Everything that Tim has said, I'm very humbled to and thankful and grateful that he's expressed us in that way. We are a true minority-owned company. And we do endeavor to involve the town in every way and every phase of growth and prosperity in our company. We want to consider Fettlesburg our home in a long-term way. And so any questions or concerns that any of you have, I'm very eager to address, speak with, and have anybody participate. I'm also very proud of some of the things that Tim mentioned. We do plan on offering very robust services to our employees in the form of educational opportunities, job training opportunities, employee housing opportunities, everything we can to create a culture of excellence and success. And I just want everybody there to know that we all are very grateful for the opportunity that your town has provided us, and we look forward to achieving our goals in the best image of the town. So thank you very much for your time. If anybody has any questions of me, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions I can.
I have a question. Project is bordered by public lands owned by the town, recreational lands.
It is.
It is also bordered by a park, which is somewhat run by the Lions Club, I'll say. They've taken a major step in handling that.
Yes.
It's bordered by the railroad. Is there any provision for some type of berming on that side, because that's all residential?
Well, I think there's already. Let me ask this question. The railroad is already below grade from our site.
Correct.
So, your request to berm is for what purpose?
To obstruct the view of the improvements that you're planning.
Okay, so it's really the improvements that you're. It's not particular to cannabis. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah.
It's the fact that
you've got a residential area there.
Sure. I can't speak to the berm because I haven't thought about it, and I would probably defer to an engineer who's smarter than I am, Mr. Rao. But what I do know is that the ordinance and regulations are very explicit about the architecture. Buildings, even for, in fact, more for light industrial than they are for the other industrial zones. So there's no expectation that these are going to be ugly steel buildings that are going to be offensive. I don't believe we're going to get away with that. And the owner doesn't have any intention of doing that. So I understand the intent of your question, but I can't answer is whether a berm is in the mix or not.
And also on the area there that borders where the public recreation area is, the town has a gazebo there. Is there going to be some type of berming there, maybe to obstruct the view of the improvements?
Again, the major exposure for that particular piece of property is the existing bakery. And what we're doing with the existing bakery is we're completely refacing it, because it's not an attractive building. So we're going to be refacing it.
Agreed.
But again, I can't answer about the burning issue. I think that's a very valid question, but I don't have any idea. Hopefully, the architecture of the buildings are going to be such that people won't find it offensive.
And how long is the Eastern Shore Forest Company going to be leasing that property from?
I think that's more of a question for Seth, but I believe, before I answer that question, let me tell you a little bit about schedule.
Okay.
MAS is on a very aggressive schedule. Our plan is as soon as we can get the Planning Commission approval, preliminary plan approval, our intent is to immediately file for the plans for the construction of the pilot plant. Now, this is all indoors. There's no outside additions or anything else. We're hoping to be able to do that by the end of September. And then for the improvements that are coming in building number two, we're hoping to be able to apply for building permits by November. So it's really a very, very aggressive schedule. With completion of the pilot plant, to be in late January, early February, and the completion of building two this time next year. So it's really aggressive.
So what's the noise level going to be?
Well, thankfully, plants growing don't make noise. So it doesn't generate noise whatsoever. So there's not a lot of big generation equipment or anything like that, and the type of HVAC system that's used in these facilities is called VRF. It's very similar to what you guys know as the mini splits, just big versions of it. So there's not a whole lot of rooftop equipment. In fact, there's none. No rooftop equipment, no noisy rooftop fans. It's a very quiet system. So I think you'll find the site to be not a noise problem, for sure.
Construction-wise, is it going to be 7 days?
No.
it's kind of noisy there now with the East Ventura.
Well, I can understand. When you have 4 foot tall saws, I mean, it's, yeah. It can get
six
noisy.
6 days a week. Maybe it's six.
Again, we haven't done the construction schedule yet to be able to achieve it, but I wouldn't. Our construction schedule is always based on a 5 day work week, about 6 or 7.
Just wondering how long their lease is going to be. I understand.
I don't know. I would.
Has the gentleman that's on Zoom now?
Yeah, Seth. Do you have any input on the length of time that Eastern is going to still be there?
Yeah, hi. Thank you. That's a great question. We've been working with Eastern Shore Forest Products to kind of make sure that they help us maintain the property pre-construction phase. Their lease ends, I believe, January, February, or March of the following year. So they should be out somewhere within that time frame, give or take a few months, depending on our construction schedule. As well as I don't want to do anything to infirm their business as they transition off our property. But I don't see us keeping them as a long-term tenant, if that's your question.
Thank you. And where is your funding coming from?
Well, first, and please take this in the right way. They are extremely well-funded, and where it's coming from is, frankly, not your business.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I didn't know whether it was going to be any public funding.
Oh, no. Not
state funding.
Not only not any public funding, it can't come from banks.
No.
Any FDIC, bank can't loan money. Can't. It's all money out of their pockets. So this is real time.
And you said during the planning and zoning meeting that there will not be any on-site sales.
Can't be.
Right. Okay.
No. No, the way it is that processing and growing can be at just one location, but you can't co-locate a dispensary. Yes, ma'am.
I've been here 32 years, and I came from the Western Shore. I grew up in what I call rural Rockville, right off Montrose Road.
I remember rural Rockville. I'm from Western Maryland.
Okay. I saw one building after another go up. There was no more rural in Rockville. The space between Rockville and Frederick was all farmland. I saw one technology building go up. I saw it in Dulles Airport. Once you start this, the growth from other industry will change the whole nature of our area.
Well, let me give you an opinion. What you're talking about is very serious because I grew up in Western Maryland. I grew up in Frederick. I remember Frederick when it was downtown was 95% vacant. But to Federalsburg's credit, you have a very, very well thought out zoning ordinance. And the prescribed uses in that zoning ordinance have been done, I think, as a planner, have been done very thoughtfully. I don't believe that sprawl of any kind based on the current zoning that exists in Federalsburg. I don't think that's a possibility. You have limits on the amount of industrial property and the regulations on that, especially light industrial E1, you have some very rigid, I'm not saying rigid in a negative way, very rigid but correct restrictions on how it can be developed. I don't know that the ordinance or your map that well, but from what I've studied, I think you're in pretty good shape not to see what you've come to Federalsburg for go away. Because this is a contained site, and I know what you're talking about with the impact of this having an impact somewhere else. And I think you're pretty good shape.
What about housing?
That is huge. That is huge. And Seth can probably talk to this a little bit better than we do. One of the first things when we sat down with the mayor and with the town manager is they expressed, because part of their social equity is that workforce housing is so important to them. Bob, for example, in the development that he's doing was of great interest. So they're actually looking at programs where they will go and acquire other property and create workforce housing. Seth, you want to comment on that at all?
Yeah, those are definitely concerns we have. Ma'am, I don't want you to think it's our intention to come in and you know, lead the charge of a complete refacing of what makes Fredericksburg unique. We have no intention of changing that. Quite the latter. We're making significant individual investments to try to ensure its sustainability. So we would very much like to hear your thoughts on what you believe the town would need moving forward, because we would very much like to provide those things. In terms of employee housing, I've spoken to the mayor and the members of the council there about the need for employee housing because of the size and scale that we would bring to the town over time, so that we'd be done in a way that is equitable and could attract and entice real talent and opportunity. We would very much like to contribute in ways that the town would find beneficial in that area.
What about the roads? You're going to bring an awful lot more traffic, and our roads can handle.
Can I speak to that just a little bit? The majority of the traffic that will be generated by this is employees coming and going. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm not a traffic planner. Any increase in traffic will have an impact on the infrastructure. But one of the things I want to stress, this is not a heavy industry. They do not get a lot of tractor-trailer traffic because what they need for their business doesn't come by tractor-trailers. The majority of transportation vehicles that are being related to this will be UPS, FedEx, and then secured transportation, which is in trucks the size of a FedEx truck. So this is not a big generator of industrial traffic. But sure, 300, 400, 600 employees coming to the site each and every day, of course that's going to have an impact. Positive, we hope.
Well, but they would also enter off the bypass.
They'll come
for the most part.
Primarily,
they generally would not come through town.
Hopefully, some of it will come from, because what I'm talking with Seth and his partners, one of the things that they're really excited about is the possibility of trying to do what Bob's doing is the infills. The opportunity to create housing in the infill lots. So hopefully some of that traffic is going to be coming from town. Not necessarily directly off the bypass and from other parts of Caroline County or from that's the intent.
Seth, can I ask a question? You said you talked with members of the council. Was there a presentation given? Do you know when that presentation was given? Just because we have a room full of people and it's the first I've heard of this. So do you know when that occurred?
Oh, boy. I'm not sure when the date was. It was just us trying to get to know everybody involved so they would, see our plan.
Okay.
I believe that was a few weeks ago on site, but I can't remember the actual date.
Okay.
I think it was present at that meeting was just the mayor and the town manager.
So not council, then?
No, especially not this, not this council.
I'm sorry.
You brought it up at planning and zoning.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
With a room full of people, I don't want the impression given that we all have had all this information and have kept it from folks.
No,
right, exactly. That
is
not
is
the case.
This is no, but you guys, I'm going to the opposite.
Thank you.
When I first met her after, she was very straightforward with me that, you know, the town is a very special place to her, and that we had to do things in a way that was in line with what the best interests of the town and the people. So I never would we ever try to do anything that everybody didn't get a chance to imbibe or have to say in. Like I want you guys to know, we all run a mutually beneficial and transparent business operation that benefits everybody to whatever extent they want to participate.
Yes, ma'am.
There's going to be an impact on the school system as well. Bring all these, build new homes and bring new folks in.
And I think that you already have a mechanism that mm-hmm. if that impact is significant, that the developer has a responsibility to provide part of that.
Yeah. Caroline County passed an excise fee yes. several years ago, so for any new construction, there's already a payment that occurs to the Board of Ed for that.
I don't know whether it extends to industrial projects that are bringing jobs, whether or not.
No, it's residential.
It's residential.
Right, because the impact of the school would be the kids that lay their head here. So it's residential construction. There's an impact fee. That is charged.
He's talking about another development. So.
Right.
No,
so
I think what we're talking about with development is small scale, and both in an origination way, but primarily in a supportive way. If there are ways that MAS can support others who want to provide housing, they're more than willing to do that. But they're not intending to go out and create a whole new subdivision somewhere. That's not their intent.
Question. You mentioned earlier you were going to be discussing the water requirements.
Yes. So the site is served by public water, of course. It does have two very well-functioning on-site wells. The on-site wells are going to be feeding what's called the fertigation system, the irrigation systems for the plants. That's going to be the primary use of that water, rather than water, the public water that's purchased. All of the fertigation water, and you have to understand this, by law, all the water has to be recycled, every bit of it. They can't take any of the fertigation water and dump it into a public sewer system. It all has to be recycled and reused. So the wells will be the ones that are providing that water. The public water will be for things like toilets, showers, those kinds of things. So the public water use for a facility of this size is going to increase more. And I do also want to talk about how the approach to stormwater is, because that's another important piece of the puzzle. The intent is for all water generated by buildings to be caught, reused as part of the irrigation system. It has to be cleaned, of course, and then used, stored and used as part of the irrigation system. Primarily outdoor growth, not so much indoor growth. So we're not going to be generating right now any additional stormwater as a result of buildings. We're going to be capturing it and using
it. Are there any stormwater management areas on the property now?
Yes, the way the stormwater is handled right now, there is an on-site underground storm collection system, very extensive on the site. That water goes untreated into the marshy hole. Now, regulations are we can't do that. And we have no intention of doing it anyway. So whatever storm water is generated on the site, that we have to treat both for quantity and quality. So when that stormwater, most of it's going to be absorbed, but if that water leaves, it leaves as clean as it came. That's just the law right now.
Any other questions?
The fencing that goes around it, by law, how high does that fence have to be?
It actually has to be around grow areas. It has to be a minimum of 8 feet tall.
8 feet.
Yeah. But everywhere else, it has a minimum of 6 feet if it has a top wire on top.
And for Seth, probably, what's the minimum, like, what's the average salary? What kind of jobs are you talking about bringing 400 jobs to town? What are they going to pay?
These are typically actually very high-skilled, high-value labor jobs, between $18 and $24 an hour. We will be bringing a substantial segment of that job sector to Fellowsburg. There will be a variety of jobs, but primarily they will be high-paying skilled jobs.
Okay.
That also cuts to the core of our educational component that Tim was speaking about earlier, to provide the town with whatever it needs long-term moving forward to participate and train and evolve to the higher-skilled jobs that the industry does provide. One of the things that is exciting about the cannabis industry is what it does offer in terms of growth to agriculture, to skilled labor force technology and training. So it really is a future endeavor where our labor force will be highly skilled. They'll understand technology systems, tracking systems, water systems, power systems, and an understanding of the cycles involved to maintain high quality product integrity. So those are all forces, I think, that make us a very beneficial operation in town.
Any other questions?
Well, if you don't have any other questions, thank you all so much for coming and listening. And this won't be the last time you see us. Like with the Planning Commission, we do listen well. You know, the Planning Commission raised the concerns, you know, about outdoor grow and the odors, and immediately the owner said, look, let's just take care of it, get rid of it, and we'll make it some other benefit to us. So don't be shy about asking questions and expressing your concerns.
I'm sorry, sir. I do have one more question before I let you get away.
Okay.
You mentioned burning biomass. I probably live the closest. I don't know. You across the river are close, too. But I live right down the road on Reliance Avenue. Last thing I want to do is sit in my backyard and see a plume of smoke flying up as you're heating the building. What type of...
You won't. It's a contained carbon biomass. It is burned, but it is a contained burn. It's not a bunch of smoke. It's called a contained carbon system. I'll be more than happy to give you all the details about it. But it's not like the one out here burning a pile of...
Right. No smell from it,
no.
Totally 100%.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
As you guys can see, I wear hats. This hat's 30 years old, so
I wasn't even born when you got
that. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Thanks, Seth. Okay, next on the docket, we have the follow-up discussion for the water tank lights and the assignment of interest with the Fredericksburg Historical Society. So we have representatives from the Historical Society and Friends of the Water Tower here. Who is the spokesperson for Friends of the Water Tower?
Can you guess?
Okay. You can step up, state your name. And then, Bart, I believe you're representing the Historical Society?
I did not come here necessarily about that. I was told that the representative probably could not be here. So I'm here to listen.
Okay.
But I do have some
statements,
statements from...
There are other members here, too. So
he's been held up in Milford.
Yes. Oh, okay. Robert.
He's en route.
He's en route, though. So.
Okay.
Mary Harding, Chairman of Friends of the Fredericksburg Water Tower. And I was asked to be here to speak on behalf of Friends of the Water Tower. And there's just a couple of things I think that I would like to say about the project. When this started basically 5.5 years ago, it was kind of a dream of the past. And if you were a resident growing up here, you will remember the water. And meeting with some friends, it was formed, the Friends of the Water Tower, which some of the people who have given so generously of their time and efforts are here tonight. In the beginning, we met with several community organizations, which some of the members of the council were on, and explained what we wanted to do. I will say that those organizations all declined to become involved with something because they didn't think we could do it. Fredericksburg Historical Society stepped up to the plate and let us become under them as a 501c3. And in 9 months, a group of started out about 12 or 13 people who were on the committee. I asked them, did they believe in what we could do? They committed, and in 9 months, we raised the money and had the water tower lit. And I, as chairman, am proud of the commitment that those people made to bring something to Fredericksburg that really has not received the recognition that it should. But it's there. We thank the Fredericksburg Historical Society for allowing us to be under them. We signed an agreement with the Historical Society and the mayor and council that we would do fundraisers each year to build the fund to maintain. We did that faithfully with a Friends of the Water Tower bingo, which has turned into now we're the bingo groupie of fundraising for many organizations. But anyway, over the years, we've done the maintenance that's needed to be done. Yes, there's been some snags along the way with technology. But we did our last fundraiser in February that we were committed to, which is when the MOU ran out in that time frame. And I believe the total, I don't have the number, you probably do, is over $40,000 that's sitting in the account, which should maintain the water tower for many years. I was contacted, and I do not recall the name of the gentleman concerning the painting of the water tower. And I spoke with Pixel Lumen, who is the contractor who did the lighting array, and with the gentleman with the water tower painting company, and it is not a significant problem to do that. Of course, this was before COVID and everything's gone up, but the estimate price, I'm just going to go the high figure because what he quoted I know cannot be correct today. Should be no more than $8,000 or $10,000 to do what would be needed to be done. And the money's there. And speaking with members of the committee and Friends of the Water Tower, we understand the Historical Society no longer wants to be involved and that the town wants to take it over. Is that correct, Mayor?
Well, I believe that the Historical Society didn't want anything to do with it anymore, and they've asked the town to take it over.
Well, the MOU takes care of that for
yes.
5 years.
Yes.
So the town was under the MOU is to take it over.
Correct.
That was signed. So the Friends of the Water Tower are fine with releasing control of it to the town. We've done our part. Now it's up to the town to do theirs. We only ask a couple things. We ask that a sign of agreement releasing all of us of any responsibility, and we ask that we have there is an agreement saying that the money that is left there is used to maintain the water tower, that it doesn't go to another source. Excuse me, too much talk. And I feel we're leaving you all, you know, with there is some repairs currently that need to be done. There was a contract that I was supposed to sign this spring, but I had gotten wind that all this was going to take place, which there's no problem, no hard feelings. We got done what we wanted to do. Everybody did their part, but felt that if a new contract needed to be done with the company for maintenance, it should be done with the mayor and council, not us. So I did not sign a contract. That would be up to you all to negotiate. Christie's had contact with, had done a lot of contact for us during the time with the internet service and all that, so she has the contacts. And we're happy that we got the job done, and we hope that you all continue to enjoy it.
And we have talked to Pixelumen, so they've been working with us, and they forward us a new contract.
And thank you for doing that.
Thank you, because a lot of people didn't believe in it.
I enjoy the
mail. There's just one thing I want to say to you to think about, because this has come up numerous times, and this is absolutely, again, your decision. The previous mayor and council, the question was brought up when we did this project, was about renting out the tower for happy birthday or renting, putting up for every holiday. First of all, it was decided not to get into that because you have charges with it, of course, with them doing reprogramming. The second thing is you all can decide as far as what you want to do as far, you know, we did the purple, what is that? The
Carolina Goose Purple.
Yeah, we did certain things, but we just felt that it was going to get too drawn out and too... You would be changing programming all the time if we put happy birthday, Debbie, happy birthday, Ed. You've got to be smart with it. So. But thank you for the opportunity.
Was there an option that you guys had to be able to do the programming yourselves, or does it have to, did Pixelumen have to do it, that they give you the option that you could go into the computer and change the program?
It was an option.
Okay.
And at that time, Duffy McConnell was really such an influence and such a help with us. We were going to use someone who worked for him. And, of course, he's been through a change.
Right.
So we left it with, but I'm sure you've got capable hands that can do it.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have any other questions?
No, I don't think
thank you for Millicent. Mm-hmm. We would like a copy of, you know, of the things that we're requesting, and we would like a copy of the check that the Historical Society would be turning over to you.
Okay.
Just for our records.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to read the Historical Society statements?
I have statements, email statements, from the Federalsburg Historical Society president, Robert Riggin, who is not able to be here this evening. And he says, this is within the body of the email, but he says, I approve of the draft you sent me for the town taking over the water tower account. And I have a statement from the board chair, Denise Nagel, who says, I cannot attend the meeting, but as president of the board of directors, I would like to add my support for this assignment of interest for the light array. So just to go on record that both the board chair and the Federalsburg Historical Society president are in favor.
Okay. Does anybody else have any other questions? So do you want to...
Well, before, I just want to make sure what I'm hearing is what everybody is hearing. The Historical Society no longer wants to be a part of this project. And we had a agreement with the Historical Society. The Historical Society had an agreement with the Friends of the Water Tower. Sounds like, Mary, what you're saying is your guys are sort of like, well, we did our job and we're done. So what that means from a town perspective is we just took on a liability without a funding stream.
I think the numbers Mary just put out were in 10, 15 grand and the 40 grand
right.
numbers.
But I'm saying, so long-term-wise,
long-term-wise,
okay. But I'm just making sure
once
that money is gone.
Right, in 10 years, if once
right.
the, based off the painting and the other maintenance.
The installation is like derogatory to the condition of
right, right.
Right.
Because what Pixel Lumen has quoted us, what was the figure?
$5,200 a year.
So that's eight.
You only raised it 400 from the
Yeah. So that right there, just simple math, if you take 10,000 from for lighting, got about 30 left. So this is, we've got 6 years before this becomes a budget thing. So
assuming there's no issues with it in between them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just paying for maintenance because the maintenance doesn't
right.
include
right.
everything.
I mean, it's up. It's on our tower. We have to take responsibility for it. But at some point, you know, one of my big things is I don't want to write blank checks that I'm not going to be here to be able to cash. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the next council, whoever the next council is, because we all serve 4-year terms, is going to be looking at what's going on. So if whether that's through a committee of ours or something like that, to be able to look at a community funding stream. Otherwise, it becomes something that we've got to look at in our budget each and every year, which is fueled by tax money.
But that's only if you decide to continue with it.
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so the stuff that has been requested.
Yeah, so what we drafted was a simple assignment of interest where it says the Historical Society hereby transfers, assigns, and conveys to the Mayor and Council of Federalsburg all of its interest, ownership, and any right or legal interest whatsoever in the light array. The Mayor and Council of Federalsburg expressly authorized the Historical Society to transfer said interest and ownership. The Historical Society represents and warrants it is the owner of the light array and has good and valid title. It is free and clear of any mortgages, pledges, liens, agreements, charges. And that was really it, just a simple assignment. And I believe the understanding is that upon executing the assignment, the Historical Society would provide the mayor and council the check with those remaining funds
to go on a specific account designated to
the Historical Society. And I'm not trying to raise an issue by any means. I never quite understood that they own it, because I don't feel the light array is owned by anybody but the town, the citizens. They were a holder of our money. They weren't the owners. I guess under the MOU that you all classified it as that, but I mean,
and they paid for the purchase.
And I do think there is some gray area and some question about that, and we felt that the assignment of interest clearly signified that they were giving any interest they may or may not have in it. But, you know, I do think that it was a little unclear and that the town could take the position that the lights are theirs without the assignment, but the Historical Society is willing to enter into it, and that's the cleanest way, really, to do it.
Okay, that's fine. I just don't... As so many citizens and businesses gave so much, I felt it was a town community ownership. They were just the holder of the money for us to keep us legal. So, and you know, we as a committee gave back to them by doing a major fundraiser for them in appreciation of them doing that for us.
And
for the town.
The Historical Society was just the holder of the 501c3.
I think part of the issue, and correct me if I'm wrong, is the MOU that we're bound under
mm-hmm.
was never reviewed by like the town attorney or voted on by council. So there may have been some.
It was generated by you.
So
no, it wasn't.
501c3 is not actually.
Dan Gilman wrote it.
Dan.
Yes, it was not written.
It was not
written by our attorney.
It was not written
by.
Nope.
Didn't know that.
and it was not voted on by council.
And the 501c3 has expired.
Yes.
Yes. No, the MOU expired. The
MOU.
Not the 501c3.
MOU.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're trying to make sure that there's no question if something happens, you know, that somebody comes back.
And really, we requested Mary and y'all to be here tonight because we kept having people say this is what wanted to be done, but nobody actually came and sat in front of us and told us. And we didn't want to be like somebody just charging in and taking something over to find out y'all still had a vested interest in it and wanted to keep working towards it.
We kind of feel like we're being asked to step back, and that's the stand that we're taking. And it is the town property. It is the water tower. You've got to do work to it. So it just seems that's where it should be. You know, we got it up there and let it stay. You know, we've done what we can do.
Well, I'll say my opinion is that, and you know, my opinion is worth exactly what it's worth. Is I'm not asking anybody to take a step back. We have an MOU that's expired, and we can't just renew it.
Well, I think we're just going to stay with what we are.
That's
going
fine.
On to
and that's fine.
This other project.
As long as everybody just understands that at this point, then it becomes a matter of public policy as to the town budget every year and what it can support, how long this fund can support it. That, as someone who wasn't involved in it, makes me like a little shaky because of how much money went into it at the beginning. And then forecasting out, like, okay, this is, like, in 6 years, this is a
thing.
A thing. This account could be drained in 6 years or less. And then what? So, I'm sorry.
Anything?
No.
Oh.
Yeah,
might have to turn the lights off.
Well,
yeah. I do believe that
the community
count.
Understands.
So, if you turn the lights off today, what happens to this money?
No.
Well, it's going on a specific account for the water tower
for
the lights.
Yeah.
So it's sustained as long as this account
if
is there.
If the tower didn't have the lights on, would the town have to pay, budget the maintenance of the tower?
So they're two different things, right?
Different
so the lights that were put on it have to be taken back off for it to be painted and then put back on. The only thing that's coming out of that account is to pay for the parts of them taking them off
and putting them back on.
It has not is not paying for any of the painting. The town is paying for the painting.
Oh, okay.
But the light that has to be facilitated in order for us to repaint it. It has to come off and they have to go back on and they have to be reconfigured when they go back on. So and the account is used to pay for that.
Nothing in the account is paying for everyday maintenance.
Okay.
No.
That is and will always be a town
so
liability.
For the
cost of having the lights up there, yes.
The lights and the lights are removable, put back on, or replacements.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and the town the town pays the electric bill on the lights. They pay that's not taken out of the account. That won't be taken out of the account. It's still paid for by the town for the electric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but when you guys first come to us, maybe we didn't vote on it. It's too far back for me to remember. Yeah, I mean yesterday's problem.
Yesterday, yeah.
No. Yeah. But at least I know we gave you the blessing to do it.
Yeah.
And the town attorney, which I believe was Brenda at the time, she was sitting right there. So if there was any issues, I'm sure she would have addressed it.
But the question was the MOU was never read by her or signed or read through and read
okay.
signed off
yeah,
on by the
that.
Town attorney. So. But, I mean, that one's expired, so we have a new one that we would like to move forward with. So, if we have any, does anybody have any concerns about this one? I'll take a motion that we can move forward with the assignment of interest.
Do you have a question?
I just have a quick question, not to embarrass anybody, but there were a couple of typos in the draft that I saw. Have they been corrected?
I don't know. I didn't catch them, which is why they were in there. So if you could enlighten, that was
just, that's just me. I'm sorry. I think you have the wrong address.
Okay.
And further down, you want the word R instead of area. I think that's in the second or third paragraph.
Perfect. So you could approve it as revised.
This ended up. Because I think you did change the address on one version of it, and this is an older version.
Oh, because Debbie had sent out the older version.
Okay, so it's 402 Railroad, correct or incorrect?
That's, I think that's the location,
that's
the location
of the water tower.
It's not
no.
the location.
But
that was my personal business address.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But, yeah, it's 100 Covey Street is the address of the Historical Society.
Okay.
Covey Alley.
Yes.
Okay.
Do you actually need the...
No. I mean, not right this second,
oh, okay.
But... I was looking for the last typo.
Oh, she's a bit more instead of area.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find.
Right. Maybe that was corrected somewhere along the way, the spell check or grammar check or something.
Well, spell check wouldn't get it because R and area are both spelled correctly, unfortunately, is my
issue.
Yeah.
Would
it
be number two?
Yeah.
Down.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay.
I've been searching for that for a while. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank
you.
And
I
need
to
add.
Can I take this?
Yeah.
Okay.
So do we want to take them? I'll take a motion to approve as corrected with the corrections.
And it's 100 Covey Alley.
Covey-Williams Alley.
Okay. Covey.
If you're going to be real official.
Thank you. Williams with an S, not Covey with an S.
Right.
Okay. Making sure.
Sorry.
Thank you. I know. The fumes.
So we're making a motion to accept, to have you sign it. How does that need to be worded?
A motion to approve as amended, and I will send out a revised copy.
I make a motion to approve as amended the assignment of interest.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, motion passes.
Thank
you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Thank you all for coming.
Yes,
yes,
thank you.
Thank you.
It's
thank
nice
you.
To see y'all.
Thank you, Linda.
Yeah. Thank you. I know, right? Sorry for the typo.
Thank you.
I told Robert that we would contact him when he can come by and sign it.
Okay, that's
so.
Fine. Okay, next we have the approval of the engineered water tank care proposal from Southern Corrosion Corporation. Tom Enter Duray.
Madam Mayor, I'm going to tell you the last month's proposal to municipal engineer Jeff Corrosion.
No,
what we've got is just a shortened version of what was submitted last month. Specifically,
it'd be
easier
when
it's
not
the entire RFQ that was submitted, or it's been a qualification for that was submitted. It's just the cost proposal, which has not changed. And it also lists the scope of work proposed year by year for a multi-year process. Staff recommends the specific question that held up last month, was the annual maintenance cost increases tied into the cost of living increase, and there was discussion about whether that constituted January 1 or date of anniversary of signing of the agreement, and the answer is the anniversary of the signing of the agreement. So watch the CIP every August to see what the increase is. The base price quoted is $40,733 a year with a consumer price index multiplier. On the revenue side, to offset the cost, the town has 1,100 renewable solar energy credits that it's obliged to sell. We've got an agreement in place with the Energy Consortium, the Energy Trust of the Educational Consortium, rather, to purchase 1,100 solar credits at about $54 a piece, which translates into a revenue stream of about $59,000 a year. That has to be spent on water and sewer. The maintenance cost is associated with water, so we've got a natural for at least a period of 5 years revenue stream to cost. In fact, the actual revenue stream, at least in the early years, will more than cover the cost. Can't say what it's going to be several years after the compounding interest of the consumer price index, but at least for a period of probably 3 to 4 years, sale of the solar credits. So staff is recommending that the council approve the proposal as submitted, and pending further discussion, provide direction to staff.
Now, we approve this. Are we approving this for basically forever till we don't, or is this going to be something we have to go year by year?
You don't have to go year by year. There is the built-in cost that goes with the backing out of the
right.
agreement. So if you get to, and again,
so basically we're locking ourselves in with that back out cost. We're locking ourselves in for, I think it was at least 7 years before it's even possible to back out due to the cost.
Yeah, 7 years would be about right. I mean, he lays out a...
Right, I don't have it from me. That's a rough estimate. And the other thing,
program now, it's still whether we're paying it or kicking it down the road.
Oh, it needs to be done. I'm not arguing that point. And then also, I know we got other quote that I can't find. What was it?
That was from Suez, and that was in the ballpark of the mid 60s.
Okay, I knew it was considerably higher, but I just wanted to remember.
It's 62, 64 ballpark range.
Right, and as of year one, 62.
Every year.
Okay.
Do we have another questions?
Your CPI. Did you hear him?
Mm-hmm. No.
As of the signage date of the...
Gotcha.
I knew that's what you were asking last time.
Do we have any other questions?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Seeing none, then I would take a motion to approve the engineered water tank proposal from Southern Corrosion Corporation.
I'll make a motion that we approve the engineered water tank care proposal from Southern Corrosion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion passes. Okay, next we have appointment of interim water and wastewater operator. Town Manager DeRoy?
Yeah, Madam Mayor, members of the council, water and sewer functions are primarily right now under the license held by Scott Getchell at PMB. Mr. Getchell is performing this role for over a year. Soon, Mr. Getchell will be leaving GMB and taking a public sector job with another agency and not able to provide the current service. Until the town staff are fully licensed in water and wastewater registered in Maryland, the town requires the service of another licensed professional. Mr. Getchell recommends the town enter into an agreement, which is attached, with Mr. George Smith for an interim period of time. Mr. Smith has provided the attached proposed agreement with the professional references, all of whom have been checked, as well as others who volunteered their opinion of Mr. Smith, which is a high opinion. So staff recommends the appointment of Mr. George Smith as the interim town water and wastewater operator working under the proposed agreement. Pending discussion, provide direction to staff.
Any questions? If Scott's recommending him, then...
Yeah,
and okay with them.
Is he willing to do it?
Yes.
A broader question, is Scott's leaving GMB completely?
Correct.
Okay, so is... I'll talk about that later.
It's probably the same question I was going to ask. Mm-hmm. Okay, if nobody else has any other questions, then I will take a motion to appoint the interim water and wastewater operator, Mr. George Smith.
Make a motion we appoint the interim water and wastewater operator, George Smith.
I'll second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion passes. Okay, next we have the January 29th, 2022 strategic planning session, 6-month follow-up discussion.
Madam Mayor, members of the council, this is for informational purposes only at this time. On January 29th, snowy Saturday, Mayor and Council met here with department heads to do a day-long strategic planning session. It was also Zoomed, and I know we had one person attend by Zoom, but no one attended in person. So several matters were discussed at the time. Staff is bringing forward now a narrative report by way of a check-in. It's my plan to have the graphical progress report in September. So the staff report here lists those items that were specifically discussed at the time: the American Rescue Plan expenditure, boards, commissions, and community outreach, the Bicentennial Committee, and communications. So It's been a mixed bag as far as progress is concerned. Also, what's attached is the actual stamp report from the 29th of January, the strategic planning session. So just to go through some of the things that were outlined there, the American Rescue Plan, and happy to report that this morning the town received the second tranche. So we're $1.3 million richer than we were yesterday. Again, all of which needs to be spent in a particular way. Priorities at that point were infrastructure projects, the AMI water meters upgrade, and the street repairs, both of which are, at least at this point, moving forward. There was also some interest in capital equipment purchase, specifically a backhoe, which was proposed at that time as a not to exceed $140,000, while the town purchased a used backhoe for a little bit less than $80,000, so that came in there. The water meters also came in under than what we had specifically budgeted. There was also discussion about moving forward with an organizational financial analysis from the firm Davenport & Company. I've been continuing to be in contact with Davenport & Company, so we'll probably move forward with that September or October. That was not to exceed $20,000, and again, the purpose of that is to look at the specifics of town finances in a bigger picture, and as debt as well as revenue and expenditures. So that's what we got as far as ARPA. We continue to do premium pay for employees. We continue to make contributions to the 501c3s who've asked, specifically the fire department, $65,000. Next month, they'll get the next $65,000. And also the $50,000 for the activity staff, in addition to $125,000 in support of water and sewer connections for Choptank Community Medical, the new Med Center over there behind the food line. So that's where we are as far as ARPA. Likely we'll spend every penny, but we'll spend every penny by way of investments on critical infrastructure. The water meters will be generating revenue for us. The streets need to be repaired because they haven't been. And the investment in our employees offsets the property tax that needs to go to pay for our employees, as well as the things like purchase of equipment. So the American Rescue Plan has come in handy for the town to move forward in some regards and actually make some progress in others. So that's where we are with that. The boards, commissions, and community outreach, the roles and responsibilities of town boards and commissions were discussed on the 29th. Several new members were appointed. Planning and Zoning Commission, the staffs reviewed the town code of ordinance for compliance, and we continue to move forward with the code review. Of particular note was the Parks and Recreation Committee, which has been vexed by scheduling difficulties, but has been discussed as a broad-based group of staff with the task of considering activities beyond the established sports leagues to open up the, to include open space and personal sort of recreational activities, like walking along the trail. The town also established the Green Team for recognition as a sustainable Maryland community. We had our training in May for that, tasked with meeting items on the checklist, and we continue to do so. And in addition, there was also discussion at that January strategic planning meeting about the mayor and town council discussed having meetings or community conversations outside of town chamber and away from other than times on the regularly scheduled meetings. That has not yet occurred, but there's still the opportunity to move forward on that. Bicentennial's been busy. It's its own committees now, working on different projects. The discrete website's been set up. This is ongoing. So watch the space as far as the Bicentennial is concerned. And then communication. And communication has been a decidedly mixed part of the mixed bag, because the town's digital communication strategy, the website, social media platforms, digital sign, seems to be successful in getting information out. Again, that communication strategy is basically a one-way. Town has information, you send it out. Although we do get comments back, and the website does have a community reported concern that a number of people have taken care of, submitted some items, and we follow up. The non-digital communication strategy has not been as successful to this point. Town staff recognizes a significant number of town residents are not online and not on social media. The formally ever-changing trash collection schedule was living proof of that, where we did a decent job of getting information out digitally. But if you want it digital, you either put your can out and wait for someone to come by and pick it up, however many days, or you got the information from a friend, neighbor, family member. So sort of the old phone tree sort of approach. That needs help. That needs some additional work. We think one asset that we added this summer to the non-digital communication strategy is good old-fashioned door hangers, which code enforcement's been using to convey code enforcement issues, but could also just as easily be used to convey general information as well. So, we've got, 1,000 door hangers? 200,000?
Mm-hmm.
So, hopefully, that stack gets smaller and smaller, just by way of a way to convey information specifically to this resident about this particular thing. You see it on your doorknob. So, if you don't want to be on Facebook, everybody understands that, but here's a door hanger. Those are the things we can do that are relatively low cost. There are other communication strategies that are non-digital that are higher cost attached to them. I'm happy to look into those, like a newsletter. A newsletter has to be produced, physically mailed, and you never know if you reach even one you want to reach anybody. So there are other non-digital formats to get information there. So at this point, those are the big pictures, items from that day, and just by way of follow-up. And again, some of these, we're using ClearPoint strategy, strategic planning tracking software. So, and they classify things as green, yellow, and red. And we've got a good amount of green, we've got a fair amount of yellow, and we've got a good amount of red. But for 6 months, I'd say that's not too bad. Also, what I've left out of here, by way of communication, is the mayor's minute, which actually predates the January 29th strategic planning. But the annual report was sort of tied to the idea of let's get out, strategic planning session, let's get out an annual report. So the annual report, I think, has been successful. It's been commented on it. People have seen it and read it. So take that as a win. And understand fully that's what got everybody here. So that's where we are by way of follow-up through strategic planning session at the 6 point, at the 6 month point. Happy to entertain any questions.
Does anybody have any questions?
No.
Like you were reading to pick one out. Everybody good?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next, we have the scheduled date of the September business meeting because of Labor Day's observance. Are we just going with the Tuesday?
So can I ask something and then back up and not ask it?
Sure.
Because you got big plans that weekend.
Oh, yeah.
The first Tuesday of every month is the Board of Ed meeting, which I am now obligated to attend.
Okay.
At the same time, Becky is due on Labor Day, so all of that may be moved anyway if our daughter is born. So,
that'll be a real Labor Day.
Yeah. So if it's on the 6th, I absolutely can't come.
Okay.
For one reason or the other. I understand. So I don't know if you would entertain making it the 12th. I may have a better chance of making it.
I don't have any problem with that. Do you guys?
I have a conflict on
okay.
the 12th. But
well, then forget it.
But
I'll get my priorities straight.
Could we move it to Wednesday, the 7th? I mean, that's just one extra day over. I mean, you still may have baby issues, but
that's what I'm saying.
You can zoom in from home.
Yeah.
Zoom in from the labor room.
I'd go great. That would really go great. Hopefully, if she's still waiting to deliver that baby, then you might have another problem.
I might hang up for her.
I can't take this vote. I have to cut the cord now. It doesn't matter to me, honestly. It's all playing roulette right this second.
Right.
But I know the 6th. Either
right,
right.
Either there's a baby or there's a Board of Ed meeting. Sorry, That's all. But I'm open every other time.
I don't have any problem with the 7th. Are you guys?
I'm good with
7th. I'm out.
You're out?
I have traps that evening.
Oh, because it's a Wednesday.
And they just have one council meeting.
Okay.
A month.
Well, I can just, if we have
yeah, I can give you guys beforehand.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so can I have a motion that we will do, what, you okay, Emma?
Is it, are you
okay? Are you okay?
No, we're good.
7th?
Okay.
Okay. So can I have a motion that we have the September business meeting on September 7th, Wednesday, September 7th?
I'll move it.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, motion passes.
I've got to write this down.
Thank you guys for at least trying.
Thank you.
It may still not work. At least trying.
We'll do as much as we can. The rest of it's all right. Becky and the baby.
We opened our baby, not a board meeting.
I'm sure Becky is definitely hoping for the baby and not the
she
board.
Hopes it comes tomorrow.
Yeah. I hear her on that.
Okay, next we have Mayor and Council action items. Councilman Windsor.
Where to start? I was heading to Hurlock, and I was up by the elementary school, and I got flagged down by a gentleman complaining about the grass at the triangle. He said, please, can we get somebody to cut it? All right, there we go. Enough of that one. All right, planning and zoning. They made it clear that they needed at least 10 days advance notice for any submitting plans for review. And, that I think it's fair. Something like what Bob Rao had and what we had tonight, you know, that was a lot to go over in just a few days. So, yeah, I can see that. Public comments, Carter Village requested to expand. Riverwalk, Bob Rouse gave short presentation, approved 48 townhouses. And like I say, the MAS, we had the same presentation, so you know what went on there. And last but not least, I want to thank the mayor for doing something that I couldn't do for 13 years. I've talked to everybody, their brother, their cousin, didn't get any results. She talks one time. Must have used her charm.
You're welcome, man. I'm happy we could get one thing off the list.
Thank you. That's it.
Did you get beat up this time?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe he was the lawyer.
We were at the planning and zoning, and Ed made a statement that he got beat up, and the guy was like, oh my god, really? And Ed, like, he was speaking metaphorically, and the guy was like, oh my god, they really attacked you over this. Oh my god. Ed had to explain his getting beat up and walking down the street and getting beat up.
In case anyone doesn't know, it's the no passing zone on the bypass bridge.
Yes, but they have now fixed their double yellow lines.
It's what Ed has been fighting for a very long time, and it is now officially a double yellow line and a no passing zone.
Yeah, we've had fatalities on there in the past, so I think it's way overdue.
I think you can still take credit, Ed.
Yes.
You can. It was your idea.
No, she...
It was your platform.
I'll put it on the list. Is that it?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Councilman Sewell?
I just have one quick thing. I had a conversation about extra trash pickup, bulk pickup, and the efficacy of somebody riding around in the backhoe following the dump or following the truck was brought up, where they're picking up, in some cases, picking up the yard waste.